The Arthropod. The Arthropod is the home for the wonderful, weird, wacky world of insects. Hosted by Jonathan Larson, Jody Green, and Michael Scavarla.
Welcome back, everybody, to Arthropod, your entomology podcast. I am one of your hosts for the day, Jonathan Larson.
And I am your other host, Jody Green.
And we are excited to be bringing you some entomological, educational entertainment. Lots of E's going to be involved in today's episode. And we've got some stuff to talk about up front. Usually got some cool business to discuss. And I think today what I'd like to talk to you about is, have you gotten anything neat in the office lately? Are you getting lots of interesting samples or anything weird?
Well, everyone's been anticipating all our worst insects, and I think they're all kind of popping up, right? did you guys get Japanese beetles this week?
In the last 48 hours, I've received 4 reports of Japanese beetles.
And then the bagworms.
Bagworms. Biggity bags.
Yeah.
Bilbo and, bagworms.
Ooh, and then cicadas. I heard them singing yesterday on campus.
Nice.
And I swore that I saw a cicada killer wasp, a male, on the linden tree.
They would come out first, right?
Yeah. And wait for the females. Mate. But we'll talk about that later. And but I was like, that's really early because last year it was around 4th of July.
Okay.
And so I was like, ooh. And it's amazing that they can time that.
This has been a really weird year, don't you think? Weather-wise.
Super weird. Yeah. And like when it happens, swarming ants this week, everyone's like, what's going on? Yeah. They're inside, they're outside, they're hitting me in the face. I don't know what to do.
It's
got to be termites or something that's biting me. What is it? And like, ants.
Yeah. Ants in your pants.
Ants in your face. Ants in your face and all over the place.
Welcome to Bug Wrap.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. We can wrap on the show. I think we're cool like that.
So I think it's finally like it's hot.
It's hot.
You know, in the 90s, and it's like it's hard to wear pants. I mean, I would prefer to wear shorts today. I'm wearing my bug skirt.
Right.
Thank you, Vex Muddler.
Legally, you're required to wear something.
Yes. I mean, I do wear clothing.
Right.
But when you're outside looking for bugs and stuff, pants are very hot.
Das Pantaloons.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to chiggers, though.
No, I got into some chiggers when I visited Texas recently, and I had an allergic reaction to the chiggers. I had these like bulging, pulsating blisters.
That's terrible.
Around my ankles.
Did you see Mike Merchant put out a blog post about chiggers?
Yeah, I hear it's in the news that chiggers are
big. Did you call him and say,
right,
you got to do this?
No, I didn't call him. I wish. I wish I had been the impetus for that.
No, it's good stuff.
I've been getting a lot of soldier beetles this week and last week.
Oh, yeah. They're mating all over the place.
Yeah. Pollen eaters. Not a pest indoors. Not going to get established in your house. Not going to feed on you or your house. Mm-hmm. Look a lot like a firefly. Same kind of leathery wings. They lack that cool flashing fire organ, though, that the fireflies have. You call them fireflies or lightning bugs?
I call them fireflies.
Fireflies. I used to say lightning bugs, but now I say fireflies.
I think I use them interchangeably, but they are out too.
Yes.
Around 9 o'clock here, walking the dog, pretty distracting.
Yeah.
I look like a creepy person in the dark.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, entomologists are renowned for that.
Instead of a creepy person in the light.
Yeah. So yeah, lots of different kinds of things out there. If you're seeing anything interesting, we'd love to hear about it. Hit us up in the comments or email the show. But for our topic today, we've got a couple of things that we want to discuss. First, just a little snippet about when this podcast is being released is during National Pollinator Awareness Week. Right, Jody?
Yeah, I think it's called National Pollinator Week.
National Pollinator Week.
It doesn't matter. It's national.
It is.
It's big time.
Yeah, and we want to appreciate our pollinating insect friends and all the work that they do. Some estimates put them at $29 billion worth of services that they provide for American agriculture. And all they do that for is room and board, essentially. So we definitely want to keep them around. We want to increase their populations where we can. But we don't just want to support honeybees, right, Jody? We want to look into some of those other native bees, which you've been a little bit about lately.
Oh, man, I am all about the bees. So if anybody follows me on Twitter, I have finally launched our Shark Tank project. So our team name is Bee Sweet, as in like S-U-I-T-E. But we are trying to be sweet to the bees. And these are not the honeybees. These are not the social bees. These are the solitary bees, the native bees, which are, you know, numerous, 4,000 or so.
4,000 or so.
Yeah. And they are wonderful pollinators. And we probably have not paid too much attention to them in the past. But I think looking toward the future, people are getting pretty excited about having bees around. And these bees, I think the number one thing to know is that they do not sting I mean, they are capable, some of them, but they are not defending a nest, and they're just doing their thing. And they're so cute. They fly around with little, like, sleeping bag looking things, which is leaves and petals. Yeah. But
and they have hairy stomachs, right?
They're super cute.
They are pretty cute.
Yes.
They pollinate lots of crops. Some of them are superior pollinators compared to the honeybee. Squash bees, things of that nature, are better for our squash plants than a honeybee would be. So we want to definitely see them succeed. We got to be careful with the insecticides that we use, where we apply them, the kinds that we choose. If you want to put out bee suite hotels like Jody has been building, or purchase those online, or even construct your own out of simple defined materials, hollow sticks and twine.
Yeah, so a lot of them nest in cavities or tunnels, and you can buy, they do have for purchase in different hardware stores, but you have to be a little aware of what you're buying, because it may not be deep enough, it may not be constructed with the right materials. So there are a couple of resources, and you can look on the UNL NIB guide. There's a Constructing a Solitary Bee Hotel. That one's a good one, put out by the Department of Entomology at UNL. There's also some really good resources at the Xerces Society, but you put out some man-made structures. You can drill holes in wood. You could put out reeds and just the hollow tubes, even paper straws and what's it called? Mailing tubes.
Yeah.
And that you just need something there. And then you want to plant a garden. You always want to have something there.
Taste for, the food.
Yeah. You want to attract them, right? If this is a restaurant, you want to bring them in. So don't get frustrated if they don't show up right away, but they, you know, they'll come. But we're really just trying to appreciate our pollinators, attract them, and conserve them. If you want to know more and you take your kids out and families to a lot of events, this should be happening nationwide, but, you know, look it up. What's around in your area, and there's some pretty cool events for sure. I know in Lincoln they've got Pollinators on the Plaza, put on by Judy in the Bee Lab.
Judy in the Bee Lab.
Yeah, Dr. Wu Smart. Yep. So go to that if you're in the Lincoln area, but definitely look up other events in your area.
And I think it's an awesome thing that they're doing this nationwide now, that people are that passionate about pollinators that they want to have a whole week dedicated to them. Mm-hmm. So we celebrate that. And we hope that you will too by contributing something to pollinator conservation. So that was our first topic, right, Jody? What is the next topic that we're going to discuss?
Well, this one might not be so family friendly. So we are going to just put that out there right now. We are going to talk about insect mating. Jonathan and I were recently invited to the Science Cafe in Omaha, and we, our topic was called Sex on Six Legs. And we were allowed to be as
vulgar,
honest.
Honest. That's a better way.
Candid.
Candid.
I mean, we told people things that they probably weren't aware of.
Right.
It was very exciting for them. They got to drink while they listened to us and eat pizza. So they were pretty excited.
They were pumped, yeah.
But for this, we'll tone it down a little bit.
A little bit.
But it is life.
Yeah.
Right? So if you've got any young people listening that don't know about the bees and the bees, we're just putting that out there right now.
So when we talk about insect reproduction, I think an important thing to point out is that it's one of the reasons that they're so successful as a group of animals, right? That their reproductive capabilities are quite explosive.
Well, and they're so diverse. There's so many different types of insects. And if you – I mean, I guess I'm hyper aware because I'm an entomologist, but there is not any – I mean, can I go 5 minutes without looking, seeing, thinking, or having an insect be part of my life, whether it be like in my hair, on my skin, like flying by on a in a product, someone texting me, emailing me, you know, I mean, they are so much a part of our lives. Even if you are not a fan, they are there. They are so successful and they're everywhere.
They're going to be outdoors. They live in almost every biome on planet Earth. And they're also quite successful in our house. As we learned from Matt Bertone on a previous episode, in the paper that he was a part of, there are over 100 different species of arthropod in the average American home. So they're indoors, outdoors, all over the place. And part of the reason that they can function like this is because they're really good at making babies.
Yes, they are really, really good at that. And also when it comes to microhabitats, there are also bugs living in bugs.
That's
so
true.
Wrap your head around that.
Insects ad infinitum. When we talk about how they reproduce, I think it's important to point out that there are different ways of reproducing. You can have internal or external fertilization. External fertilization we see with things like fish and frogs and some other amphibians. where their eggs laid, and then the male comes around and he sprinkles sperm near them, and then those eggs are fertilized. This is in insects, this is not how it occurs in most cases. There are spermatophores that things like Calimbula may leave around that the female will then take.
Right, so a spermatophore is just a little gift packet of sperm.
It's a gift card of sperm.
Oh, hello. What is this? So the female can pick that up. I think it's silverfish, fire rats, and Calimbula. Or he can give that to her. Like, hello, I have something for you.
This is my calling card.
Yes.
Creepy.
No, thank you.
There are some insects that do that. But for the most part, we're talking about animals that use internal fertilization where they will pair together and the male inserts an ediagus, in this case, his phallic organ, and then uses that to deliver sperm from his body into her body, which she then collects inside of an organ we call the spermatheca. The spermatheca is a balloon-like structure, and that is where she collects sperm that she's going to use over the course of her life to fertilize her eggs.
It's a little bit of a safety deposit box full of sperm.
Absolutely.
What am I going to go in there for?
Sperm.
But which one do I want to pick, and what's important at the time? What means a lot to me, and how am I going to use this?
Right? Yeah, and I think it might be important to point out that when we talk about insect sperm, like if you imagined, this is going to sound really gross, a balloon of human sperm.
Wrong.
There would be a lot of things mixed together, right? In the case of the female insect, it's a little more distinct, and perhaps she can be a little more selective with what she is choosing to pull out of the spermatheca.
Would it be like a filing cabinet?
That seems more, yeah, more apt.
Categorized?
A balloon with a filing cabinet inside of it.
Remind me not to accept any balloons anytime in the future.
Okay. Done. That's just a good rule of thumb in life in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's important to know the reason why is because there is so much sperm competition when it comes to insects. So there are, unlike some species which mate for life or have one partner or monogamy and all that, insects.
You seem a fan of that.
Well, we're talking insect world. Right. Like, they would be like, what? I need to procreate as much as possible.
Right.
And I need to have the most fit offspring.
Yeah.
And I want as many to survive. Like, I mean, the eggs, the number of eggs and nymphs that can
be made,
hundreds and thousands, right? And so they don't all survive.
No.
But that's why they have to have so many.
And the female has to be more selective about whose sperm she chooses to use with her eggs because she has a limited supply of eggs. She is also the longer lived of the two sexes in this case. And she needs to be selective so that she can ensure her progeny will also be successful. Males are kind of a dime a dozen. Sperm, a penny a dozen in this case, probably.
Right. So they want to mate with as many females as possible.
They want to spread their chances around, essentially. The female is a little more selective, and therefore a lot of insects have elaborate courtship rituals that take place in order to prove that you are the more suitable mate for the female. Our friends at Ask an Entomologist have recently been doing some posts about this, right?
Yeah, so Nancy had put up something about, courtship behavior. So if you can go to askanentomologist.com, their blog, they always put a lot of good things up. And she actually referenced something back in 2016 where she talked about, I guess, that sex and insects are not always consensual. And it's very interesting because something that we talked about is, you know, there are people that think that if sex wasn't pleasurable, it
was spurred by a Neil deGrasse Tyson tweet where he says something along the lines of, if there was a species for whom sex was not comfortable or pleasurable, that they would have gone extinct. That essentially, that pleasure is what drives things to mate and therefore a species being successful. And there, the main thrust of the argument against that in the Ask an Entomologist post is that insects have sex, and insects have sex in weird ways that I cannot fathom would be very comfortable for a female insect, because male genitalia in the insect world, I believe I put it in the talk at the slowdown as there are a plethora of different penises out there that insects can have. Penis is a generous term in this case. I don't think it's a direct analogy, really. They're not the same, but they do have an Ediagus or an intermittent hose that they use to go from them into the female to transfer the sperm packets that they're producing. And in some cases, they have specially designed Ediaguses that are used to claw out other rival males' sperm. So they're spiked, they're serrated, there are graspers. These things are used to pull out competing sperm to ensure that he is the sole possible parent. They also have some males that leave behind a plug that is supposed to stop her from mating again.
Honeybees?
If you look at honeybees, the male drone bee, after mating, his genitalia explodes. He ejaculates so hard that his genitalia pops off. You can hear it. Do you want to make a popping noise?
Like, I'm not really good at it.
Like that? Like maybe? Yeah. I think you can hear it audibly as a human if you were standing in a bee yard. And when that's happening, it kills him, obviously. And he leaves behind his Ediagus as a blocker to stop the other drones that are in the area from being able to mate with that queen. Unfortunately, they're all equipped with special hooks and claws that pull the other Ediagus out so that they can insert theirs. Apparently didn't watch very hard what happened to their bros.
But and how many times does she end up mating at that time?
From what I've learned from beekeepers at the Omaha Bee Club, it can be 13 or 15 times that they're going to copulate with different drone bees.
Hmm. Yeah, I think some of the words that you used when you were explaining this during Science Cafe was like horrifying, yes, terrifying, when it comes to some of the shapes and forms of insect penises.
Yes. There was one that it was a beetle Ediagus that had backwards facing hooks on it, and it just looks like an octopus tentacle with rose thorns on it. It's horrifying. And I think that the Ask an Entomologist point is very pertinent, that there, I cannot imagine that that induces feelings of euphoria for the female insect.
And that they're saying, I've got to do that again, and we can't wait to do that again.
That there's more of a drive to just pass on your genetic material rather than have a pleasurable moment of intimacy with your fellow insect.
You were talking about plugs. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are insects that just continue to continuously mate so that another male can't compete. So they just grasp on and they hold on. So after they scoop out, for instance, dragonflies and damselflies, they scoop out the sperm of their rival and then they mate. And they're holding on to the female behind the head with some specialized claspers on the end of his abdomen. And he's not letting her go. And in cases with dragonflies, he may let her go so she can lay the eggs that are his offspring, but he will patrol and monitor and be very territorial of her. So if
they're stalkers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these might not be healthy relationships.
No, I wouldn't say.
But these are insects, so it's a totally different world, right? In the case of some stick insects, they've been known to mate for days and days and weeks.
Right.
And they can mate repeatedly. And also, when you're mating continuously, no one else can mate with your girl. So
jealous.
Yeah. Like, and then
insecure, petty things.
Oh, gosh.
That's a lot of anthropomorphizing there.
It's true. It's true. And then because I do, we do bed bug talks probably more than any other kind of talks. Traumatic. Actually, last night I gave a talk and I did not have to talk about bed bug sex for once. So
that was
good. But it's called traumatic insemination. And people usually laugh at that and gasp. But it's the male has this, what do you want to call it?
A bread knife? For a penis, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, he stabs her. It looks like one of those things that the Grim Reaper has.
Oh, a scythe, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's heavily curved.
Yeah. And he stabs her in the side of her abdomen. So it's not, it's very different. And he ejaculates in her body cavity, and then the sperm travels to the spermatheca, which stores that sperm. And so some insects actually can keep that sperm throughout their lifetime, and other sperm, I think in maybe social insects, don't last as long, and they do have to mate again. But imagine being able to call up, like, hey, remember that one? He had really fancy, you know, eyeballs, eyes. Those were beautiful compound eyes. Like, let's call up his sperm. Let's, you know, lay some eggs. So,
apart from the spermatheca, though, their internal anatomy is sort of analogous to ours. A female insect has ovarial type areas that pass the eggs down through lateral oviducts into the median oviduct. As they travel down into that median oviduct, they go by accessory glands and the spermatheca, where they're fertilized and then passed out of the body and then laid individually or in groups or put underwater, wherever it is that the insect prefers to have their eggs at. Some of them use ovipositors to deliver those eggs. Others just simply pop out an egg case or two or three or an egg.
And it's called an oootheca. It's a very interesting word when you see two O's in a row. And it's like I was talking about oothecas yesterday when I was talking about cockroaches.
Yeah.
So they lay, well, some of them, like the German cockroach and American roach, oriental roach, are common ones. They lay these little purses full of even-numbered nymphs that will come out of there. So that's one of the reasons why they're also very successful, because at one time this purse hatches and all these nymphs come out, all the same size and ready to go.
On the male side, it's also sort of like ours. There are two testes inside of the body that produce the sperm, which then travel down a vas deferens, and then they go past the accessory glands where they may be globbed over with some liquid that helps it to pass out of the body before going through the ejaculatory duct out of the male and into the female. The males, they have the ediagus that can look drastically different depending on what species you're talking about. They do have other organs on their body that some people have noticed and get kind of freaked out about. There was a series of pictures last year in 2017 that came out of a swamp moth, a swamp tiger moth. And these moths, they're the woolly bear moths. And so they're very famous as a caterpillar, but as an adult moth, some of the males have what we call cormata. And cormata would look like a penis to some people because they're kind of fleshy tentacle looking things and they're very hairy. They're gross looking. I mean, you would agree with that, right?
Yeah.
I'll put a GIF in the show notes.
Right. And then when you called it, like, doesn't it mean like feather
dust? It's a feather duster.
Yeah,
Cormata is a feather duster. The idea, it's not a copulatory organ, but rather it's part of the ritual of courtship, attracting a female to the male. So he puts these hairy tentacles out, these cormata out. It produces a pheromone that draws a female to him. He will caress her gently with his hairy tentacles, perhaps familiar to some of you out there listening. And the scent entices her to begin courtship or to begin copulation. And
so
then,
it's more scent and pheromone rather than size and width and featheriness of the cormata.
It's a confirmation of the correct species that you're trying to mate with.
Always important.
Also probably a confirmation that it's a male and a female that are going to begin the pairing. And then he'll suck those back in. And a lot of people were really freaked out about this last year when they saw them, because it just looked like, I think I saw something that it was a satanic tentacle moth that had penises coming out of it. It was very...
Yeah, we'll definitely have to put that in the show notes.
A couple of good GIFs out there that we'll include.
So aside from pheromones, how else do they attract their mate? Or how do they find each other in a world of millions of insects?
It's a good question. And pheromones are a key part of it. I mean, pheromones are usually what insects are going to rely on because they don't have the best vision in most situations. So it's hard to see each other across a crowded dance floor like a human might and realize that there is some attraction there. So a pheromone is long-lasting. It
Let's explain to someone who's never heard the word pheromone.
It's a chemical that's produced by the insect and is detected, hopefully, by members of the same species to induce a positive reaction. Some of them are pheromones that cause aggregations. So they cause your
thoughts. I want to be with you. Is that where the party's at?
This is where everybody's hanging out.
Party time.
There are defensive pheromones.
Stay away. Oh, social wasps.
Or attack. Yeah. It will induce an attack. Like
someone's trying to kill the queen. Let's attack.
Let's get her or her. There's also pheromones for stopping people from laying eggs over the top of your eggs, stopping other insects from doing that. There are trail pheromones.
Follow me. Yeah. Let me lay my butt down on the trail. I found the food. Follow me. Pizza for pizza.
Yeah. But in a lot of cases, they are sexual. So they're used to confirm species. Outside of the pheromones, there are other things that insects can do to begin courtship and hopefully begin the mating ritual.
I'll sing you a song
is a really popular way of doing it. A cricket or a cicada. They are very acoustic. They're like that guy at every college party with the guitar that knows a couple of songs. and uses them.
Ooh, what about the guy that does the dance?
Or dances. There are dances out there that are important. Or aggressive displays, fighting, wrestling, jousting. These things are important to insects. Madagascar hissing cockroaches, for example.
Yeah, I had to get them out of my office because they were fighting all the time.
You got to break them up, right? So they lower their thorax. The
prothorax, I got work to do.
has a couple of knobs on the males, and then they headbutt each other, much like a goat or a male sheep.
Nonstop. And hiss. It's the only time I hear them hiss. Yep. Yeah.
And then whoever wins is the observant female is going to choose him to be her suitor. There are other sort of displays of prowess or of fitness. And antler flies, we see line up their eye stalks. And then if the eye stalks are longer on one male than the other, the dejected, defeated male usually flies away. If they're of similar length, then they will fight in order to impress the female.
So in that case, the size matters.
Size does matter for antler flies, yes. The acoustics that you mentioned before, those are really key for crickets and for cicadas, where the male produces a loud noise to try and woo the female closer to him. And
the downside of actually making noise when you're trying to find a female is that you open yourself up to predators. Right. And so right now with when we were talking about cicada killer wasps, I'm pretty sure they can find those cicadas because they are loud.
Yes.
And
they're some of the loudest animals on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And crickets, I know there's been a lot of research about the louder the male is, the more likely they are to mate, but the more likely they are to be found by predators. And so there are some males with quiet strategies or with non-singing strategies, and then they swoop in and steal females from the actual singing crickets, which seems like a really...
So you court with your friend.
Right.
Hey, my friend.
Oh, your wingman failed you really hard.
Yes.
Fireflies, they have a way of communicating using those flashes that we are always looking for in the summer. So there are species-specific flashes that males produce in the air, and females respond with from the soil or from the turf below, and then they know to mate with one another. So there's lots of things that will begin that courtship and initiate that mating behavior and hopefully confirm that you're going to mate with the right species and that you're pairing with a male or a female so that you can produce future offspring.
Mm-hmm. And if you happen to be interested in seeing any mating insects, just go outside and look at your flowers. We've got the soldier beetles mating. If you've got any milkweed, the red milkweed the red milkweed beetles are mating. When the Japanese beetles get a little more plentiful, they mate everywhere all day long, all over the place.
It's kind of funny because a lot of the things that we think of as parts of summer, like fireflies flashing, the noise of crickets and cicadas and katydids, that's all about bug sex.
Yeah. It's all associated with that. So when you're like, oh, look at that. Isn't that beautiful? Just be like, that's about sex. Sex.
And once they initiate copulation, we talked before about it's an internal fertilization process. And there are lots of different ways that they deliver that sperm and then move the eggs out of the body. But it's a weird, weird world out there for insects. It's not – I know that we as people, we often judge – animal behavior next to our behavior. And there are lots of weird things with insects. I mean, there are analogous things. We use the word stalker at one point, not to trivialize that or anything, but the males of insects can be very possessive of the females, trying to ensure that their genes are passed on. I don't think it's a great thing for female insects. Some males don't make it out of the mating process, like the honeybee drones that we talked about.
Right. And the praying mantis is probably one of the most famous. Everyone's all, the female, she's going to eat the male.
Yeah, it's become
so terrible.
It's a meme, you know? Right? Yeah.
Yeah, but this is what I say to friends. I'm like, if he's already mated, what else does he have?
Right.
What does he have to give? He needs to offer himself. If not, she will take it because she needs that protein. It actually ensures better survival for his offspring.
Absolutely.
What else does he have to do?
Well, and a lot of males, they die pretty much immediately after mating anyway. They've expended a lot of energy trying to find the female in most cases, and then the act of mating itself finishes them off. Again, in the animal world, I think it sounds, I don't know what the word would be, but males are cheap, right? Males, they are disposable in a lot of animal species because individual males can create millions or thousands of sperm. So you only need a few of them to get enough sperm to fertilize females that are present. This sounds like sociology or something.
But once they mate, Like, they don't...
They're not needed.
They're not... I mean, in the social insect world, especially with ants and, right. and bees and wasps, they're all females. So, right. they're there to mate. They don't even... I mean, with the cicada killers, and they don't even help build a nest. They don't catch any prey.
Right.
So... If you could provide food, I mean, not you, I'm sorry, I'm looking. If you as a male insect can provide food and nourishment for your female, like, hey, why not?
Why not?
Right?
Yeah.
So she's going to take it anyway. She needs to eat. And maybe by that time you've already mated a couple times and got away. But it's important. I mean, there are – the male does offer the gifts somehow, right? Sometimes. To females that could help, like protein.
Nuptial gifts that can help to distract them from getting eaten, hopefully. It's another courtship behavior.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, some males will bring food directly. Some males bring saliva.
I'd take the food.
Yeah, scorpion flies, they're supposed to bring globs of saliva. The larger the saliva glob, the more impressive they are. And then are able to mate with the female. Mm. If you give a female a large food item, you buy yourself more mating time because she'll allow you to mate until she finishes it. And so if you give her a big fly, you get 30 seconds to mate. Give her a little aphid, maybe you get 2 or 3 seconds to mate instead. You probably are not as successful in that case.
Mm. Well, maybe she thinks you're lazy.
Yeah, you're a cheap date. Yeah.
Or you're not stealthy enough to get something bigger.
It's a weird world, though. I think we can agree with that. It's... Mm-hmm. We anthropomorphize a lot of things as people. We compare it against our behavior, and we get freaked out by it. I think with insects in particular, the reason that things like mantises eating the males or black widows, that's a big thing too, right? People talk about black widow females. That's why they're called black widows, because they eat the male and kill him. There's something about that that freaks male humans out, that that's why maybe it becomes captivating to some of them, is because... It seems like such an inverse of what we think of as normal behavior, I guess. This is getting a little psychological, perhaps, but it's a weird, weird, wacky world for insect mating.
Yeah, and I think for praying mantids, too, like, that's a favorite for a lot of people. They're probably the most like us as humans because they can rotate their head.
They
seem like, you know, when it comes to forelegs,
right.
Forelegs and hind legs and whatnot, that they seem very human-like. They hold on to things. And so
they're religious.
Oh, I mean, yes. They're very human-like to me. And so maybe people can relate more with them. And so when she eats the head off the males, that hurts their feelings.
Maybe. Maybe you're onto something there. If you've got thoughts about that, or if you've heard of other interesting courtship behaviors that we haven't discussed, we would love for you to share those with us on the show.
Yeah, definitely we hope this is just an introduction to something that you might find interesting.
Yes.
And then definitely look into it more.
Check out Ask an Entomologist.
Yeah, the Ask an Entomologist blog and website, they're great. I've actually been looking at two books right now, and it's funny. One's called Sex on Six Legs by Marlene Zook, and it's lessons on life, love, language from the insect world. Very interesting. And then this one's a really funny one. I saw it at one of the professors in the Department of Entomology, but it's Dr. Tatiana's Sex Advice to All Creation. And it's kind of...
It's got some weevils on it.
Yeah, it's pretty much about mating, but it's not just insects. It's a lot of other organisms, but it's written in the point in the form of like a Dear Abby or Dear Eloise or whatever.
As we conclude the show, would you like to read one of those?
Sure. Dear Dr. Tatiana, I think I've made a dreadful mistake. I've just lost my virginity to a fellow who recently escaped from a local fruit fly laboratory. He's bigger and badder than wild flies, and he says he's put a spell on me, so I'll never be able to have sex with anyone else. Do you think that's possible, or is he all bluff? Afraid I've been bewitched in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, I kind of like that. It's a little anthropomorphic, but fun.
And they're all written that way.
Yeah.
So you already talked about the honeybee one, but it's, Dear Dr. Tatiana, I'm a queen bee, and I'm worried. All my lovers leave their genitals inside me and then drop dead. Is this normal? Signed, Perplexed in Clover Hill.
In Clover Hill. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a fun book. Definitely something to check out. We'll put a link to maybe an Amazon page in the show notes, so people can find Sex on Six Legs and Dr. Tatiana's Sex Advice for All Creation. We will put a PG-13 at least rating on this podcast episode so that people know what they're getting into. We hope that you've enjoyed learning just a little bit about the very complex world of insect behavior and insect reproduction. If you have any questions or if you want to share anything that you've learned in the past, you can always find us on the web at arthro-pod.blogspot.com. Leave a comment on our blog posts or email the show through that website. You can also find us on Twitter at arthropod_show. And you can find me. I'm at @JLarson_UNL.
And I'm at @JodyBugsMeUNL.
And you can let us know what you think of this particular episode or if you've got ideas for ones in the future. We hope you have enjoyed learning a little bit with us today and that you'll catch us next time on another exciting episode of Arthropod.
It's time for our insect heroes to put away their nets and pheromone traps. Join us next time, same bug time, same bug channel, as the Arthropod gang make the world safe from poor insect podcasts. Until then,
keep on bugging.